Welcome to Hacking Your ADHD. I'm your host, William Kerb, and I have ADHD. On this podcast, I dig into the tools, tactics, and best practices to help you work with your ADHD brain. Hey team, after last week's episode on toolkits, I got a request to do another episode, but specifically on sleep tools. Now, before I jump into this episode, I want to talk about why I typically haven't been doing so many episodes on specific tools. What it comes down to is that often the specific tools aren't what's the most important part. What tends to be the most important are the strategies and reasons behind the tools. I kind of think of it like if someone told me they needed help fixing their bike, and I just handed them a wrench. But what they actually had was a flat tire. Sure, a wrench is a great thing for fixing a bike when you need something tightened. But without the understanding of what's going on behind the scenes, that tool may actually be useless. A specific tool can make all the difference when implementing a strategy. We just need to know the why behind it. So, for this episode, we're going to be skipping a lot of the basics of sleep. What we're actually going to be focusing on this episode is our sleep hygiene, which is just a fancy way of talking about all the good habits we have related to our sleep. And so we can get into the why behind what we're doing in each section, but we'll spend time talking about the specific tools. And I'm going to try and include links for everything I talk about in the show notes. And just as a note, none of these are going to be affiliate links, just either things that I use or have used, and probably a few other things just for options in there. So if you want to follow along with those show notes, you can find them at hackingyouradhd.com/182. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for the last 7 years I've been drinking AG1. Unlike many other supplement brands, AG1 conducts relentless testing to set the standard for purity and potency. I've been asked if AG1 is the real deal, and honestly, it's already something that had made its way into my daily routine even before they became a sponsor of the podcast. This is because quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I love that I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. I know starting a new habit is hard, so when I do, it's important to me that I'm doing the right things. And taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. AG1 simplifies this by making it so there aren't a million different pills and capsules to keep track of. Just one scoop of AG1 mixed in water every day. Knowing that AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality means that I can trust that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high-quality product that easily has worked its way into my daily routine. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/ADHD. That's drinkag1.com/ADHD. Check it out. I also wanted to let you know about the Hacking Your ADHD newsletter, Any and All Distractions. And that's what this newsletter is all about. The things that have caught my interest over the past week that I think also might be interesting to you. In it, I bring you the top things of the week that have caught my attention from the world of ADHD and beyond. If that sounds like something you'd like in your inbox, just head over to hackingyouradhd.com/newsletter and sign up. All right, keep on listening to find out some of the things that you can do to help get you a good night's rest. Before we get into anything else, let's start with the four pillars of good sleep, which are duration, quality, regularity, and timing. Duration is our easiest pillar to measure. It's just how much sleep did we get. Depending on a number of factors, including these other pillars, you're going to need about 7 to 9 hours of sleep at night, with some recent studies pointing to women needing to be a little higher on that range than men do. Our next pillar is quality, which also tends to be fairly easy to understand. When we did sleep, how refreshing was it? Now, of course, this is also something that's going to be highly subjective and harder to gauge. While there are sleep trackers out there that can shed some light on this information, the best indicator is actually just how you feel in the morning, given that we are hitting those other pillars as well. Next up, we've got regularity, and this just has to do if we are regularly getting enough sleep and if we're sticking to our sleep schedule. Are we chronically denying ourselves the amount of sleep we need? If we are, that's going to add up. And due to our circadian rhythm, we want to be going to bed and waking up generally at the same time every day. I know, boo, sleep routines, they're hard, but we'll get into it. And then finally, we have timing, which I know sounds a lot like regularity and maybe even duration, but instead here we're looking at our chronotype. Are we a night owl or are we a morning lark? Or perhaps something in between? If we're not sleeping according to our chronobiology, it's going to have a big effect on that quality of our sleep. All right, so with those pillars in mind, let's talk about how we're going to get a good night's sleep. And first, we're going to start at figuring out when we want to be going to bed. Our first step here is going to be looking at if we're giving ourselves a big enough sleep opportunity, which basically just means from the time that we go to bed to the time we're getting up, is there enough time built into that slot so that we can get those 7 to 9 hours? Now, I want to be clear here. I say 7 to 9 hours, but most people are not going to be on the 7 hour side of things, and especially not if that's what they're trying to get on average. So if you're saying that you want to get into bed at 11 p.m. so that you can wake up at 6 a.m., that's just not enough time in bed. There's going to be some amount of time in bed that you aren't asleep. Typically, we're expecting it to take 15 to 20 minutes for us to fall asleep once we're in bed. And while some people will naturally fall asleep faster, that usually is an indication of insufficient sleep, and usually at a chronic level. So what we're looking to do here is figure out how much sleep we want to be getting and then giving ourselves some padding so that we can have that opportunity to get that amount of sleep. The way I typically look at it is that if I want to wake up at 7 a.m., that means I should be aiming to get into bed at, say, 10:30 p.m. the night before. That gives me an 8.5 hour window to get my sleep in. I like doing it this way because typically I want to be able to wake up without the need for my alarm clock in the morning, which then gives the whole morning routine go a lot more smoothly. But I know everyone's going to have their own limitations and individual preferences here. I tend to be a light sleeper, so waking up with an alarm clock is not a big ask for me. Now, unfortunately, getting to bed also takes time, and because we want to be ready to fall asleep when we get into bed, there are a few things that we want to consider when we're looking at when we want to get ready for bed. We're all going to have our own preferences when it comes to our bedtime routines, so I suggest making a list of all the things that you want to make sure happen when we're getting ready for bed. For me, it starts with taking out my dogs one last time, plugging in my phone downstairs, making sure the doors are locked, and turning off all the lights, and then heading upstairs. Once I'm there, I'm going to want to be able to do all those things that signal me it's time to be getting into bed. Taking a shower, brushing my teeth, getting into pajamas, going to the bathroom one last time, and maybe doing a little light stretching. I mean, I've been dealing with a little plantar fasciitis recently, and so working on my calves before bed really helps me in the morning. But also, just doing the work of stretching can help relax your body into getting ready for sleep. Also, if you're going to be doing anything else to get ready for tomorrow morning, like, say, laying out your clothes or packing lunch, make sure to include those on your list here. And if you take melatonin or any other supplements to help you with sleep, this is also the time to be doing so. And just a quick note about melatonin, I'm not going to specifically recommend taking it, but if you do, I recommend that you are taking about 30 minutes before you try and go to sleep so that you can have that effect as you're falling asleep. And I want to take a second here to talk about screens. As I mentioned, I don't take my phone up into my bedroom, so of course there is the recommendation that we get off our screens an hour before we go into bed, although some say two, but we're not going there. For some people, that's related to light, but the real thing for me is that I usually find there really isn't anything on there that gets me specifically ready to go to sleep. Although maybe you listen to podcasts or something that's going to be helping you get ready for bed and falling asleep. So it's going to have to be something that you figure out how you want to manage if you don't want to have it in your bedroom, or if you do want to have it in your bedroom. I've personally never read an email or found something on social media while scrolling that has made me more ready to fall asleep. I'm not saying that you have to leave your phone outside your bedroom. I mean, many of you are probably using it as an alarm clock, so I know that's a hard ask. What I am asking is that you're mindful about how you're using it before bedtime, and that you work on coming up with a plan beyond, well, I'm just not going to look at it. Because especially at night when our executive functions are running low, relying on willpower isn't a real plan. Personally, I find that using app blocks can be helpful in these situations. While the built-in screen time features aren't terribly robust, they are an option, but we have others as well. One I've used in the past is Freedom, which is fairly good at blocking apps at certain times of the day. Additionally, there are also apps like OneSec that will delay opening an app by about 7 seconds, which really gives you some time to decide if you want to be opening Instagram at 11 p.m. Now, we can try and figure out how long all of this is going to take, and work on figuring out not just when we want to be in bed, but how long it's going to take us to get there. So, if you want to be getting into bed at 11, and it takes 30 minutes for you to get ready for bed, then we want to be heading up for bed at 10:30. But all we're really talking about here is when we want to be going to bed. This is just about setting our intentions, but as we all know, we can have the best of intentions about what we're going to do and still fail to follow through with them. Which then leads to the question, how do we get ourselves to actually start getting ready for bed when the time comes? Well, if we've worked through that first part, then we at least have a rough idea of when we're going to want to start getting ready for bed. Which means that we can set an alarm for when we want to start getting ready for bed. Maybe an alarm for when it's time to start wrapping up whatever we're doing in the evening so that when it comes time to stop, we're actually ready to stop. Because I know if I'm in the middle of watching a show or playing a game and that alarm goes off, I'm going to wait for the end, or at least a good stopping point. I'm not going to stop right when it goes off. it's important that I'm aware of how my future self is going to try and sabotage myself. And here's the thing. If you're an adult, no one is going to be making you go to bed. That's on you. And so we have to decide how we want to enforce that for ourselves. Personally, I know that it's better for me to stick to my bedtime because if I don't, I'm just going to try keep putting it off and off until I can't keep my eyes open at night. And I also know that it's way easier to manage my ADHD the more sleep I get. And so that means even if I'm not going to be getting a perfect night's sleep, it's still worth it for me to not keep putting off my bedtime and get what I can. All right, now let's talk a little bit about our sleep environment because that's going to have a big impact on the quality of our sleep. We want to make where we sleep as comfortable as possible for us to get into sleep. And we also want to make it so that the only thing we're doing in bed is sleeping, or at least getting ready for sleep. The reason for this is that our brain likes to make associations, and if we associate getting into bed with something like doing work because we're always working on our laptop in bed, that can make it harder for us to fall asleep when we do get into bed. Now, I mentioned the second part about getting ready for sleep because there are things that can help you get ready for sleep that are not sleeping. For example, I tend to read myself to sleep, but because it's what I do to help get myself to sleep, it's a fine activity to do in bed. Now, I should note that for me, this pre-bed reading, I'm typically only reading fiction and stuff that isn't going to be revving up my brain into planning mode. However, I do know people who find reading fiction too engaging, and that itself can keep them up. So it's important to figure out what works for you and create that balance of engaging enough so that your brain can relax into sleep, but not so engaging that it keeps you up. Now, to start making our room as optimized for sleep as we can get it, we're going to start by getting things dark. Like real dark. No, darker. In an optimal setup for sleeping, we want our rooms to be pitch black. No light at all. Easier said than done with the amount of artificial life we have in our lives now. It used to be that we only had to deal with moonlight, or a fire keeping us up at night. But that hasn't been the case. Let me check my watch. Ooh, for a long time. Also, bear with me for a moment. Something that just absolutely blows my mind when I think about it is the fact that moonlight is really just sunlight. It's just that the sun is so bright, it's reflecting light off the moon and still lighting things up. I don't know why that boggles my mind, but there you go. Now, let's get back on track with getting our rooms dark. And the best way to do this is through blackout curtains. As I said, ideally we are making our rooms pitch black even when the sun is out. However, most curtain rods tend to hang the curtains in a way that gives a lot of light leak around the sides. You can have the best blackout curtains, but if they are loose against the wall, you can actually still end up with a fairly bright bedroom. My personal preference here is for blackout roller shades that have a side seam. They tend to be really tight on the wall and are great at covering up those gaps that create the light leak. Now for me, this is something that I am personally very sensitive to. Just a little bit of light tends to wake me up, so mileage may vary on what you need. And with the shift to brighter mornings, I've also started using draft blockers on my doors to cut down on light seeping in under them. Along these lines, we also need to consider other light sources in our bedroom, namely all those tiny little LED lights from our gadgets. Now, I'm sure many of you are asking, do I really need to cover up all the LEDs in my room? And the answer is, well, maybe. The biggest factor being how well you can actually see them. The only way light is going to be affecting our sleep is when it goes into our eyes or filters in through our eyelids. So if you're waking up and those little lights from your room are staring at you, then that's a sign that they need to be taken care of. But if you don't even notice them, then they probably aren't actually a problem. As the best way for taking care of the lights, you can remove the ones that you can, and for the ones that you can't, for say something like a smoke detector, there are little anti-light stickers that you can stick on top, but another great option is just some duct tape, because that just covers up the light and you don't have to worry about it. Of course, another option for making things dark is to just use an eye mask. I mean, why try and cover everything up when you can just cover your eyes? Personally, this isn't my first go-to since I find sleep masks don't stay well on me since I tend to move around a lot at night, but they can be great for when I'm traveling and I don't have a lot of other options. Like when I was at the ADHD conference last year and my hotel room had giant wall-to-wall windows with zero curtains. There was just no chance that I was going to be able to make that room dark. So it was great that I was traveling with my sleep mask. My personal preference is for one called the Manta Sleep Masks, which has little cups so that it doesn't put any pressure on your eyes and still keep things remarkably dark. I also have one that is like a soft silk material, and instead of an elastic strap, it's just a nice soft material in a big strip all the way around, and it secures with Velcro. Now, on that note for traveling, while this wouldn't have worked at the place I was because of the size of windows, there are options for travel blackout curtains that just stick on your windows with little suction cups. Now, we all know in general suction cups are a bit finicky, so when I'm traveling I also bring little clippies so that I can attach them to the existing curtains if I need to. Alternatively, another great option here is to just use some of those big yard waste trash bags and duct tape. Yeah, it might look like you're setting your hotel room up like a Dexter kill room, but you'll probably be getting better sleep with how dark things will be. Okay, so once we've gotten our room dark, we also want to have it at the right temperature. And here we're going to want things to be on a bit on the cooler side. Although if it's too cold, that's also going to impede sleep. Most sleep research suggests a temperature of 65 to 85 degrees Fahrenheit, and that's 15.6 to 20 degrees Celsius. But really, you want whatever is most comfortable for you. There are a lot of options here that you can also look for cooling your mattress to help get yourself to the right temperature. You've probably heard ads on other podcasts for 8 Sleep, and their pod cover that allows you to control your bed temperature. That's actually what I have, and it's mostly great. I'm not a fan of the fact that it's entirely controlled via an app on your phone, since I don't keep my phone next to my bed, which means that if I want to adjust anything, I have to get out of bed and go find my phone. Also, the temperature control is with water that is pumped through little tubes in this pod cover. And while I don't have a complaint about the tube specifically, we have had a leak before, and that was a pain. Although their customer service was great and sent us a replacement right away, so kudos for that. Also, just worth mentioning here that, again, 8 Sleep is not a sponsor of this show. Although, hey, maybe I should look into that now that I'm thinking about it. We'll see. And with that, it's also worth considering that a mattress cover like that is quite pricey. I actually used a similar product for a number of years before my 8 Sleep called a chili pad that worked on a similar concept, but was just a mattress pad that I stuck on my bed. And with a quick look on Amazon, it's showing me that there are a lot of these type of products on the market now, so that might be more economical. While I can't speak to any of the products that I haven't used, I will say that when I travel, I do miss the ability to control my bed temperature, especially in the summer. Now, while we're on the topic, it's also worth talking about how comfortable our bed is, because that's also something that we're going to want to consider. And my advice here is to just do what is most comfortable for you. There isn't a lot of good data on what the best type of mattress is, so do what you like. Some people are going to want something really soft, while others are going to want something that's foam, while others will insist that sleeping directly on the floor is what's best. And the same goes for your pillow. I use one called the Pillow Cube because that shape fits me great, but everyone is going to have their own preference here, so you're probably going to have to do a little bit of experimenting. For other bedding, I'm a big fan of weighted blankets, which works in a way that's similar to an occupational therapy technique called deep touch therapy, or DPT. The idea behind deep touch pressure is that it can stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system and effectively put your body into a rest mode. I've gone through a lot of different iterations of weighted blankets because it can be difficult to find the one that really gives that deep touch pressure. The way a lot of weighted blankets are designed, they have a bunch of little pockets in which there are weighted beads. Depending on how densely these pockets are filled, you can have a really uneven effect of the weight. So, the weighted blanket that I have found that works best for me is actually just super heavy because of the amount of material it uses. It's this big, chunky knit blanket from Barabee.com. Oh, and a note on weighted blankets, the suggested weight for them is to be about 10% of your body weight. So if you're 150 pounds, then get a 15-pound blanket. But your individual needs will probably vary, and it's important to note that heavier isn't always better. Another option for deep touch pressure are things like the Sleep Pod from Hug Sleep, which is basically just a really tight sleeping bag, or there are also things like sensory compression blankets that will wrap around the bed and give you a nice tight sheet that you can crawl under and get that pressure from. Alright, I think this is a great stopping point for this episode because there's a lot more to dive into in this topic, so I'm going to be splitting this into 2 episodes. So stay tuned for next week, and I hope this helped with some of those tips for getting better sleep. Thanks for sticking with us all the way to the end. Before you go, though, let's do a quick rundown of today's top tips. 1. The 4 pillars of good sleep include duration, quality, regularity, and timing. 2. Create a bedtime routine tailored to your preferences and needs to signal to your body that it's time to wind down. You can work on limiting your screen time before bed by using app blocks or screen time features to minimize your exposure to that overly stimulating content. 3. Optimize your sleep environment by ensuring darkness, maintaining a comfortable temperature, and investing in bedding that promotes relaxation, such as a weighted blanket. If you'd like links or to read this episode's transcript, you can go to the show notes page at hackingyouradhd.com/182. All right, that's it. Thanks for listening. I'd love to hear what you thought of this episode. Feel free to connect with me over at hackingyouradhd.com/contact. If you'd like links or to read this episode's transcript, you can go to the show notes page at hackingyouradhd.com/148. If you'd like to support the show, the best way to do so is to tell somebody about the show, especially if you think they'd like a particular episode. Just click the share button on your podcast player and send it over to them. And now for your moment of dad. Why do dragons often sleep during the day? So they can fight knights.